I'm Stephen Rothwell. I'm the Linux Advanced Power Management Maintainer. Advanced is a bad word.
Sometimes it works.
More advanced than turning it off.
Yeah. Before I start, I should ask, none of you guys actually program BIOSes, do you? No, good.
He's going to be insolent.
Yeah. This is basically what I'm going to talk about today, a bit of motivation, why we want power management, why I did it, a bit of history, and then I'm going to talk about APM, which is what I did, and I'll talk a little bit about ACPI, which is what I didn't do, and we'll talk about the implementation, how we did it, and how you use it. I'm going to talk about device APIs, and if there are any device driver writers here, I urge you to listen and take note. Down to that point, I'll be talking about Intel and mainly APM. As I keep telling Paul, talking about Intel covers like 90% of the market, so the rest are just noise. I'll talk a little bit about other architectures like PPC and Transmitter. Then I've just got some references and we'll take some questions. Okay. Whoops. Okay, first time I did this talk, I thought about motivation, and it sort of came down to really justification rather than motivation. But I was thinking about this, and justification's easy. How many people have got a laptop? Okay. How many people travelled more than, say, 2 hours to get here? That's the justification. My motivation, well, the other justification is that these days people build these great big farms of PCs or have PCs all over their corporations, like thousands of them, and they're all sitting there burning power, especially if they're running Linux because you don't shut them down every night. And we want to reduce power bills, turn the fans off, save noise, things like that. My motivation was the fact that I got a laptop about 7 years ago when not so many people had laptops, and it was running Windows, and I thought, this is a bit of a silly thing to do. I'll put Linux on it. So I put Linux on it, sat down, put it on my lap, and almost burnt myself. This wasn't good. The other thing was, of course, that on Windows the power management sort of worked, did things. In particular, it would turn itself off when you shut it down, and of course Linux didn't do that. And I thought, anything Windows can do, we've got to be able to do it as well. The other motivations is longer battery life, like the flight from Sydney to LA is 14 hours. And on my first laptop, the battery would last about, an hour if I was very lucky, which doesn't get you very far. And these days, your laptops, all your P3 laptops and some of the P2 laptops come with fans, which make a bit of noise. If you turn the fan off and you don't do any power management, then the P3 is likely to melt through the bottom of your top, straight through your knee. That hurts a lot. Sorry?
My one does.
Yeah. Okay. One thing you'll notice on most Linux laptops these days, the fans don't run. Well, they don't on mine anyway, except when you build kernels, and then they run and turn themselves off again. Okay. Bit of history. Before 1992, it was total chaos because I hadn't thought about this yet, and neither had anybody else. Linux, of course, existed only just. Linux on laptops, there weren't that many laptops. But somebody was thinking about this. Unfortunately, the somebody was Microsoft and Intel. And in 1992, they came up with this thing called the Advanced Power Management. It was advanced because before that, there was none. So, step forward. Mid-1993, I got my first laptop. Things change. I didn't know about APM at this point, and I thought, okay, let's see what this hardware is and let's see what we can do with it. Unfortunately, I couldn't do anything with it because there were no hardware specs. So you sort of stuck. But I was walking through a bookshop one day, and I saw a book on the shelf called Intel's SL Architecture. I thought, interesting. Opened the book. What it talks about is power management. I thought, oh, good, hardware specs. Fortunately, it was for a 386. I had a 486 laptop. Things were a bit different. So I tried to do some of this stuff. The first thing you learn about power management and Intel's way of doing things is what they invented was a new mode on your processor. You all know you've got real mode, you've got protected mode. Well, they invented a thing called system management mode. And when I described this to a friend of mine, he got really scared because system management mode's a mode you can get into and the operating system can't do anything about it. You end up in 32-bit real mode and all interrupts are disabled, including the NMIs, and there's no way to stop the processor going into this mode. You don't get back unless the thing that's running puts you back. Anyway, I thought, okay, this looks fun. Switch my machine into system management mode, just crashed. I never figured out how to do this. It's probably better documented these days. But yeah. So all the late 386s, most of the 486s, and all the Pentiums have system management mode. One of the things it would be good for if somebody really felt like it would be writing a good debugger, because you can just stop the operating system dead and you've got access to all your memory, but it would be hard. September 1993, new APM spec came out. The APM version 1.0 spec left an enormous amount to your imagination, which is never good in a specification. 1.1 tried to clarify a lot of that. It sort of did. This is about when I found the APM spec. Unfortunately, I found it on the Microsoft site. But it was on the Intel site as well, so I downloaded it from there. And I started hacking away at it. I got the machine to power off. That wasn't too hard. I also discovered I needed my first workaround for a BIOS bug almost immediately. 1994, we put some APM into the kernel. Yeah, things get better. I get lots of bug reports. Do lots more stuff. 1996, we get APM version 1.2, which clarified an enormous amount, which was really good because people were asking all these questions and saying, well, the spec doesn't say anything about that, so I'm not going to do it. Unfortunately, in 1.2, they clarified all this stuff, so I had to do it and make it work. Microsoft and Intel were realizing that APM was really a bad mistake, and it sort of was pretty clear from the very beginning. So in December, they released this thing called the ACPI spec. ACPI stands for Advanced Configuration and Power Interface. They like advanced. I mean, you know, there are no non-advanced things, only advanced things. And the APM spec, well, the version 1.2 of the APM spec, which is the latest, is about 60, 70 pages. The ACPI spec, which admittedly covers more than power management, but is like 300, 400 pages. It's like this thick. I've never have read the whole thing. It's a good way of getting to sleep at night. It's amazing. The ACPI version 2 is in draft. Well, as of, that's like January, February this year. The ACPI version 2 is interesting because you have to actually sign up on the website and join the consortium in order to get hold of the spec. So I haven't got a copy because I don't necessarily believe that people should do that. Where do we go from here? In ACPI, Compaq joined... Is it Compaq? No, Toshiba joined Intel and Microsoft, which probably helped because at least Toshiba manufactured laptops, right? So they knew the issues here. With version 2, Compaq and Phoenix also joined, which is useful because Phoenix writes BIOSes. It doesn't necessarily mean they do it right, though. Okay. What's APM? APM is actually a BIOS interface specification. This is why it's a bad mistake, because somebody else is writing the software and we have no control over it. And they tried to define the interface between the operating system and the BIOS, which comes supplied with your laptop or whatever your PC is. As I said, they left a lot of things to your imagination. I don't think Microsoft has a lot of experience in writing real APIs. As Andrew would know, you write the API afterwards, you know, to do what you implemented. This is an example for Miguel of why you don't do policy low level, because the APM basically defines policy in the BIOS, okay? Which means you're stuck with whatever the BIOS implementer decided was a good idea, which is not always right. Alternatively, they provide this setup. You get a setup screen when you boot into your BIOS config, and you can set all these timeouts and things. And not very useful when you don't want to reboot very often. What APM allows you to do is for the operating system to cooperate with the BIOS, and a bit the other way as well. What can happen is the operating system can inform the BIOS when it considers the machine idle, which is useful. My first laptop, the BIOS was badly written, and what the BIOS considered to be idle was that you've stopped typing, which is not very useful when you're doing kernel compiles. And what I discovered is that my kernel compiles went like 8 to 10 times faster if I typed. Right, so I'd start a compile, I'd go away, and I'd come back 3 hours later, and it's got through like a third of it, and then I'd start typing, and it'd finish. So if the operating system can tell the BIOS when it's idle, this is much better, because the operating system actually knows, right? So it knows that there are processes out there doing things, and it can stop it lowering the speed of the CPU. The operating system can, in theory, manage the power of devices. That's what the theory says. In practice, it's really hard because there's no way to figure out what the BIOS calls each device. Right? Basically, you can say, turn the power off on this type of device, all of this type of device, or this particular device of this type. There's no way to find out what they are. There's no enumeration, which is a problem. And the operating system can manage the power overall. Again, it's sort of, the BIOS will do things off its own bat. It'll basically tell the operating system, we're going to suspend now because I think we're idle. which is sometimes good because the BIOS knows, for instance, that the battery's going dead, and it can say to the operating system, we're gone. The operating system doesn't get to say anything, but at least you know it happened. Some things that are a problem here are like the BIOS only the BIOS has access to the sleep button. When you push the button on here, which I won't do, the BIOS gets told about it, right? And what the operating system gets told is that the user did something and would like to suspend, but the operating system can then say, okay, we'll suspend, or no, we won't, but it can't decide to do something else, for instance. So. And it's very coarse-grained. Basically, you can suspend, you can resume, or you resumed. You don't get to decide to resume. We need a lot more than that. Okay, ACPI. ACPI is actually a lot more than just power management. It's in theory supposed to provide the operating system with a description of all the hardware that the motherboard at least knows about, okay? Which on a laptop is, you'd imagine, is really useful because everything's on the motherboard. In practice, the BIOS writers get in the way again, and they tell you about some of the things, but they don't tell you about everything. They tell you about what they want you to know about. on top of that, the ACPI provides you with methods or functions for doing things to devices. So you don't actually have to know how to do things to the device. You can just basically look up in the ACPI the particular method, like the method to turn a device off, and you can execute it. These methods are written in a interpreted language called AML, which stands for ACPI Machine Language, which is pretty imaginative. The problem with this, of course, is that you need the interpreter for AML in order to actually run the methods. So the ACPI guys for Linux have actually written such an interpreter, and a couple of weeks ago went into the kernel. It's big warning in the configuration help. It says, if you do this, if you select this, you will add 120K to your kernel, which everybody wants. somebody was saying to me the other day, Microsoft is basically forcing us all to be like Microsoft, because if you implement ACPI, you end up with all this stuff. The difference with ACPI is that the operating system has complete control. Basically, the ACPI says, you've got all these devices, you can do these things to them, go for it. This is good, because the operating system actually knows what it wants to do. It's exported the policy, at least up one level. The operating system can then export the policy wherever it likes, which is, of course, what we do, because we don't want to make actual decisions about things. We'll just let somebody else do that. You've got access to the sleep buttons and things. Basically, user pushes a sleep button, operating system gets an event that says the user pushed the sleep button. Do what you like with it. Yeah. You could make it pop up NetHack. there's still some dependence on the BIOS writers. Microsoft, in Windows 98, the first edition of Windows 98 depended on the ACPI. If it was there, it would use it. This caused all sorts of interesting problems. And the first bug release, and certainly the second edition of Windows 98, disabled the use of ACPI for any BIOS written before the 1st of December 1999, which gives you some indication of how well they were going. It then had a whitelist. It says, if this is a BIOS that I actually recognise and I know works, we'll use it. Otherwise, we won't. Which is the sort of the inverse of what you want to do. Maybe you want to have a blacklist and say, we know this one's really bad and all the rest are okay, but it's not the way it worked. So basically, there was incorrect information, methods wouldn't work, there was incomplete information, so you could do some of the stuff, but just doing some of the stuff is not enough because this other device over here doesn't recover when you resume because you didn't suspend it properly. All this sort of things go on. You've got much finer grained power management. The spec defines 4 power levels for your CPU, 4 power levels for each device, and 5 power levels for the, well, 5 sleep modes, which are effectively power levels for the system as a whole. It's going to be a pain. Basically, you can have the CPU running either at different speeds or at whatever you need to do to lower its power usage. And the only difference between the different levels is how long it takes you to get back to running full speed. Okay, so given this information, you can decide if you want to go put your CPU into a low power mode, because it might take you 10 milliseconds to get back from power mode C1, whereas it might take you 100 milliseconds to get back from C3. And if you need to have some sort of response within 20 milliseconds, and you don't want to go to sleep, that's going to take you 100 milliseconds to get back. So you've got all this information now, you can make rational decisions. The sleep modes, again, are just how long it takes to get back, how much effort it takes to get back. Obviously, the bottom sleep mode is basically powered off, which is way down there. The level above that is effectively hibernation, powered off, and you can come back again afterwards. They also, just for the heck of it, they put in a thing called S4 BIOS, which is BIOS-assisted hibernation. So you can just sort of say to the BIOS, I want to go to sleep now, but save everything. So that's effectively the old APM-style hibernation, which is useful, of course. But there's a guy out there who's written a software suspend patch, which you probably all know about, which is actually useful under Linux because it only saves what we need to save. Like, we don't save all these pages that have got nothing useful in them. Whereas the hibernation on the built-in to the BIOS has to basically save all of memory, all the video state, all the video memory, and anything else it can think of into this enormous file. Okay, let's talk a little bit about implementation. Okay, what have you got to do? The operating system, first thing it has to do is initialize the APM subsystem and enable it. You've got to do both. I guess that makes sense. This, of course, is the very first thing you had to do. The very first thing you had to do was the first BIOS bug I found. I had a laptop from NEC because I worked for NEC, and it came with a docking station. And this is useful. The trouble was, if you enabled APM while the laptop was in the docking station, the laptop would freeze. So there's a very long-standing configuration option that says, do you want to enable APM, right? Because you don't necessarily need to do the enable because it may already be enabled. But this particular laptop, even if it was enabled, if you did the enable, it would freeze. So there's a compile time config option for it. At one point we had 10 compile time options for the APM code in the kernel, and I think all but one of them were for BIOS workarounds. So if you had this particular laptop, you enabled these options. If you had that particular laptop, you enabled those options, just so your machine wouldn't die, which is not good. Next thing we did was software power down. In 2.0 and before, what that did was we had an option that said power off at shutdown. Okay, you did it at compile time. Anytime somebody did a shutdown to a halt, it would power off or not, depending on whether you configure the option. In 2.1, Linus decided, or somebody decided, it was a good idea to split halt and power off into two separate things, and they were right, of course, but I got all the bug reports saying, I do a halt and it doesn't power down anymore. I say, well, what did you do? And he said, oh, I only upgraded my kernel. Good. So we then got rid of the power down on halt configuration option, so one goes away, that's good, but you had to pass minus P to halt, otherwise it didn't power down. And of course, the most popular distribution at the time, Red Hat, didn't pass minus P to halt by default. So as soon as everybody upgraded the kernels, I got all these bug reports. And I think I answered the question probably several hundred times over a year and a half. Just saying, just put minus P. Oh, they say it works. Good. The next thing that came up was, BIOS writer is really good. About a year ago, a year and a half ago, one of the BIOS writers released a new BIOS. And they obviously tested it under Windows, which is fine, but they didn't test it under anything that stayed in protected mode when it halted or tried to power off. And so all these people were getting, they'd go halt and it would try to power off and it would panic after, you know, right at the end. This is not a big problem because everything's unmounted and everything, but they get this panic. I thought, oh good. So we invented the real mode power down option, which meant switching the kernel back into real mode before we tried to power down, and that solved that problem. We actually got some of the BIOS manufacturers to fix their bug, and we actually got at least one of them to acknowledge it on their web page, but the rest of them called it a Linux problem. The next thing we want to do is improve the idle loop so that when you're idle, you can actually save power, because what do you want to do when you're idle? Nothing. And when you're doing nothing, how much power do you want to absorb? As little as possible. Okay, this actually started before APM came along. Linus came up with this brilliant idea. He invented halting. Right, when you're not doing anything, don't do anything. Windows still hasn't figured this out. Right, when you're not doing anything, you do something. Don't know what they do, but they do something. So on Intel, anyway, you think there's an instruction that says halt, and it does exactly that. It just stops. And it does nothing until it gets an interrupt, okay? Which is useful. If there's nothing to do, there's no point in doing anything. This becomes even better because on the 486 SL chips, the later ones, the power-managed ones, and all the Pentiums, when you halt, it actually stops the clock because the insides of the chips are static, so you can do this. And when you stop the clock, the power usage of the chip sort of drops through the floor pretty well. So doing a halt actually turned out to be a useful thing, and people suddenly discovered that all their laptops were running quite a lot cooler when Linus put the halt in, and their fans didn't turn on so much on their desktops, all sorts of things. It was really good. Okay, the next thing you want to do is you can actually tell the BIOS that you're idle, the APM. And when you tell the APM BIOS you're idle, it'll do things like, it'll say, okay, we're not using this, and we'll just power down all these things. Or it'll say, oh, okay, let's run the CPU slower, which is actually not useful if you're halted, right, because the CPU is not running at all. But it can be useful if you're doing other things like Windows does. So you run the CPU slower. The problem with that is, of course, you've got to tell the thing when you're not idle anymore, otherwise your CPU runs at like... Some of these BIOSes actually lowered the CPU to like 1% of its rated thing. So you've got a... You can imagine you've got your 100 megahertz Pentium. Suddenly it's running at 1 megahertz, which is why my kernel compiles were taking so long. Let's see. In 2.2, we just basically had a hook into the idle loop so that if we had APM enabled, we would just tell the BIOS that we're idle. In 2.3, Linus thought it would be a good idea if we had a separate power management idle loop. So we invented the kernel APM daemon, and I started getting bug reports about this process that was using all our time called KAPMD. And if you sit there just running top on a, if you sit there running top on a 2.3 kernel, the top process, if you're doing nothing else, will be KAPMD, and it'll be using like 85% or 90 or 95% of your CPU time. And these people are all worried because, you know, it's idle. Why is it using all this time? Well, actually, it's just the time is getting accounted to that process. It's not doing anything. It's the idle loop. But, what else have we got? One of the biggest absorbers of power on these things is not the CPU. Well, the CPU is one of the biggest ones, but not the biggest. Up to 40% of the power on your CPU can be used by the backlight on your LCD and the LCD panel. Okay, so a good thing to do is when you're not looking at the monitor, turn the backlight off. Okay, so we put a hook into the virtual console blanking routine that would actually turn the backlight off. Because actually, just blanking the LCD and leaving the backlight on doesn't save you anything. Almost, so you're still driving all the pixels, and the backlight's actually a little neon light, or they used to be neon lights, and they are now. So we do that. We have a proc APM, which basically just tells you status. So you can look in there, and it'll tell you you've got this many seconds battery life left, if the BIOS knows and tells you. And we have dev APM BIOS, which is an interface between user mode and the kernel device driver, so you can do things like tell the kernel to suspend now, or you can get told when the BIOS wants to suspend. So it's this is a dead end. The last version of the APM spec came out in 1996. That's 4 years ago. All the concentration and energy seems to be on ACPI now. I'm still doing work on APM occasionally. I still get bug reports. Lots of people's laptops are still only running APM. Lots of desktops don't implement ACPI yet. Any new desktop or any new laptop you buy will support ACPI. However, the ACPI in Linux is not really up to it yet, so APM is not quite dead, but dying. Okay, ACPI. ACPI requires a user mode daemon, otherwise it doesn't do anything. Good start. That's okay, but that's fine because that's exported all the policy now is out of the kernel. Right? The kernel just is an interface to the ACPI, and the policy is now in user mode. The daemon decides when to go to sleep, what devices to power off, can do all that sort of stuff. It currently is capable of doing software power off. It currently will suspend on some laptops because I've seen one that it did it on, but not mine. So we're still getting there. It actually uses these different CPU power states in the idle loop. So the longer you stay idle, the lower power you use. Okay. So in a sense, it probably does a better job of idling than the APM does. ACPI is definitely a work in progress. There's lots of work going on. As I said, the ACPI guys recently got a big patch into the kernel. I tried it out yesterday and it didn't do anything different than the old stuff, which was this big and now it's this big. What do we got? This is, in theory, the way of the future. However, it's pretty large. Dave.
Breaks on. Well, you say it's got a way to go. Are there
Oh, sorry. This is read the way to go, as opposed to it's got a way. Well, it does also have a way to go. For instance, there's currently no implementation of any policy. Okay. It's very simple at the moment. It knows how to power off the machine. On some laptops, it will actually suspend. There's a proc entry, proc sys ACPI sleep, and if you write anything in there, the machine should go to sleep. Now, this laptop doesn't do that, but I've seen one that did.
Right now, it's either sleep or on, and there's no different C states.
It uses the different CPU power states in the idle loop, so it does that as well. The infrastructure is now in there to do power management of all the devices, except there's no interface to that. There's no user-level interface to do it at the moment. I'm not actually on the ICPR mailing list, so I don't know where they're going. All I can tell you is what I can see from their released code. Okay. There's a tiny bit of application control. The ACPI daemon exports a socket which you can connect to and send commands on. The only command I think that's implemented is get me the battery status, I think. Which may be useful, at least you know your battery's dying. Okay. Where do we go from here? Driver APIs. I've added this just recently because this being a technical conference, I thought I should talk about something technical. What we need from driver writers at the moment is for the drivers to cooperate in the power management of the system. Because if the drivers don't cooperate, then we don't save any power. And in fact, in theory, if a driver refuses to suspend, you shouldn't actually suspend the system, because when you resume, the driver won't know and may well need to reinitialize its hardware and won't know that. The classical example is if you're in X, you suspend, you come back, and you're not anymore. You're gone. So what we need is for that. That's sort of more of a user mode issue, but the same is true of things like sound cards. A lot of sound cards don't recover from being suspended. Ethernet cards, goes on and on. Okay. There are currently, under Intel, three APIs for drivers to interact with the power management. You can talk directly to the power management. Under 2.2, that was the only way. That's not true. Under 2.2, you could also, as a PC card, you could interact with the power management. Under 2.3, you can, any PCI device can just register itself with suspend and resume callbacks, so it will know what's going on. And all PC cards can register for device events as well, which is actually very useful when you think about it. The direct way. Under 2.2, we had APM register callback, because APM was the only way on Intel. Basically, you said to the APM code, here's a function, just call it when you get an event. So the APM idle loop sitting there going, oh, are there any events, are there any events? And the BIOS says, yeah, we want to suspend now. So any driver that had registered with the APM will get this callback saying, we want to suspend. And the driver can say, okay, let me just do a few things. Okay, go. Or it could say, no, you can't do that now. We're waiting for something. You know, we're halfway through paging in a critical page. Don't do it. There's also a user mode equivalent of this. If you listened on Dev APM BIOS, you'd get an event out of there, and you got the choice. You could decide not to. Well, you could say that's okay now. If you tried to say no, that's not okay now, it would ignore you and do it anyway. This is something I want to fix. Okay. In 2.3, the ACPI guys invented PM register, which was useful. It means we're now independent of the power management, the underlying power management. Okay, it's effectively the same, though. You say PM register and you give it a callback routine, and it will call you back for certain events, basically only suspend and resume at the moment. But it does allow you to do anything you need to do. PM access, if you're going to access your hardware, you should call PM access just to make sure the hardware's awake before you access it, otherwise bad things happen. And PM dev idle is a hint to the policy to say this device is now idle. You could power it down if you wanted to, or we could, you know, just so you know it's idle. Okay, so these are what you want to register. You want to find out about things. The PCI device registration, when you register a PCI device driver, two of the things you can do are give it a suspension resume hook. So whenever the power management policy driver, whatever that is, decides we want to suspend the machine, all the PCI devices get told about it if they've registered these hooks. This is actually very useful because one of the things you can do to a PCI bus is turn it off. If you turn the PCI bus off while all the devices are still alive, the devices really aren't really happy. So what you've got to do is do things in the right order. The other thing is that PCI buses can be chained. So this PCI bus can hang off that PCI bus, and if you turn this one off first, you're in trouble. So the PCI subsystem takes care of all this and goes through, recurses across all the PCI buses, bottom up, tells all the devices, then tells all the buses, and then turns off the top level PCI bus if there is such a thing. So you can actually, in theory, go around and just turn off particular PCI devices, or you can turn off a whole bus if you're not using it. All this just saves power in good ways. PCI devices should also register directly with the power management so that they can do PM access and PM dev idle calls, because they're good hints to the policy so that we know what's going on. The PC card driver registration is very similar. If you're a PCI device and a PC card device, i.e. you're a card bus device, you don't need to do this because you're registered with the PCI subsystem anyway. But if you're not, if you're a regular sort of PC card, then this is useful because you get the PC card subsystem has sort of a global callback thing, which allows you to tell drivers things like, your card's gone away, or we want to go to sleep now. And again, you want to know that because you want the device driver for the card to know that you've gone to sleep before you turn the power off to the PC card controller, the PCMCA controller. Otherwise, the driver may well just die badly next time it tries to access the card. And it does things in the right order. So it turns the cards off before it turns the PC card, the PCMCA controller off as well. As well as this, which I haven't got a slide for, there's a user mode interface to APM at least. The ACPI one will have an equivalent, and I'll talk about PowerPC in a minute, which allows any user mode process to connect to Dev APM BIOS and be told about all the events, so you know when the BIOS wants to suspend. You know when the user's pushed the suspend button. There are other things you know. There's a standby mode, which is sort of half asleep. You can find out about that. This wasn't being used by a great many things, except a thing called APMD, maintained by Avery over here. This is what you do. You write the infrastructure, and you leave policy to somebody else. And I got somebody else, so this is all right.
I link to the distributions to decide exactly what they want to do with the power.
Yeah, well, you've pushed it up another level. Somebody else will do the policy, that's okay. But APMD allows you to do arbitrary things because it basically calls a shell script on each event, and the shell script can do arbitrary things like it can do a software eject on your PC cards, because there are some PC cards that don't like just being suspended. They need to be ejected when you turn their power off. You could also do things like switch away from your X server before you suspend and then switch back afterwards, so because suspend works in text mode but doesn't work in graphics mode. This has become less necessary now because I got this mail from one of the X3-4 developers who said, we've discovered this APM stuff. It would be really useful if you did this little patch. So I did the patch. And so now X3-4 knows about APM. So now when you suspend, the X server gets told you're going to suspend, so it can save all the state of the graphics and do what it needs to. And when you resume, more importantly, it can put it all back again. So suddenly everybody's X servers work.
There's a difference between APM and ACPI support,
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Yeah, it can be, or if you know enough about the device, you can just, I mean, a lot of devices these days have power management things you can do to them. Okay, so in particular, all the PCI spec defines a generic way of turning PCI devices on and off or changing their power level. But in the case of a device you don't know about, yes, you basically interpret the AML associated with the particular power-off method for that device. And that's why you need the interpreter in the kernel, because you may have to do this when you can't load modules or when you can't go out to user mode, like it's your disk controller that you're booted off, you need to do it. So it is a bit different, and it's actually reasonably hard and a pain. We've actually found a good use for the AML code, though, because you can interpret it by hand, which means that if the people who put together your laptop actually bothered to build the ACPI stuff for your laptop, you can find out about interesting devices on the laptop that they won't tell you about without an NDA, or they won't even tell you about at all, but they still allow you to enable and disable devices and power manage them, even without knowing what it is, which is useful. But the X3 thing with that was actually useful. Unfortunately, it's already out of date because, of course, APM's going away and ACPI is taking over, but ACPI doesn't currently define a user mode interface, so we're sort of stuck at the moment. Yeah. Which is why APMs still run a lot of laptops, I guess. Other architectures, very quickly. Besides these, there's also Spark, which I'm told you can power off in software, but I've no idea how to do that. I've got no idea if there's anything else useful. We know that happens because when you install Solaris on an UltraSpark, one of the installation questions is, do you want this machine to turn off after 30 minutes of idle time? Right, you do this at installation time once. And you say yes, and you leave the machine idle for 30 minutes, and it turns itself off. Okay. Right. I'm not a Solaris person, but we discovered this because, of course, we came in one day and the machine was powered off. We thought, hey, good. Okay. On the PowerPC, laptops at least, Paul McCarris, who's the maintainer, did his own thing. In a sense, he's lucky because there's basically one set of hardware. There's a PMU, a power management unit, and it's, I assume, the specifications for it. Yeah. Sorry?
Apple may have some specs internally, but they haven't released them.
Okay, Paul figured out how to deal with this device. The PPC port does some power management. Basically, it has a user mode daemon that does all the work, like ACPI does. Any applications that want to interact with the power management interact with that device, with that user mode daemon. There's a restricted set of hardware which makes life easy. However, I think Paul's going to discover that life gets a lot harder soon, because suddenly there are all these PowerPC machines out there with PCI buses and people are putting cards into them. And it's going to get a lot harder. One of the things we need to do is to integrate the power management from the different architectures, so that as far as the drivers and things are concerned, it's the same at the moment. It's different on a PowerPC. The transmitter Crusoe, this slide was written a while ago, and we didn't know very much about it. We still don't know a hell of a lot. Dave can tell us a lot more. One thing we do know, though, from the white papers is that it can do not only speed changing of the CPU, but voltage changing of the CPU, which tends to save you a lot of power. The hardware, again, is fairly restricted, so they understand it well and they can do what they like with it. My impression was, I'm not sure if this is correct, but the first pass they did actually an APM BIOS. Okay. Oh, okay.
what you said, the frequency and voltage changes.
Yes.
Right, and there is a...
Okay. I'm being loose with my nomenclature here.
Yeah. Just because of MSRs, I have to change that.
Okay.
So, and we've already put together, I think we've already put together the path which will help you change it. So.
Okay. It's not been integrated in the kernel, though.
It's not the kernel just yet.
Okay.
We just started checking in all of this. So.
Okay. I'll watch. Right, yeah. We'll watch for it. I did notice that we now recognize Crusoes. That went in there and they say, oh, we've got a Crusoe. Good. Yeah. Again, it's all software controlled. There's a couple of white papers about it on the Transmeta site. I think, Dave, you said you were going to switch to an more ACPI style power measurement.
Yeah, we're focusing on ACPI, but like
okay.
APM.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned that sometimes the backlight is up to 40% of the power of the CPU, but for us, it's up to 300% of the power of the CPU.
Right.
So it's a terrifying problem.
It
so
is.
Actually,
yeah.
We've actually started already packing it for one, two. Unfortunately, these little tiny systems have, there's only a set of like, maybe you have more experience with this, but there's only, gosh, there's got to be less than a dozen computer chipsets out there that are used by these guys.
Right.
And that helps a lot.
Yeah, one thing you discover though is that every time a new laptop comes out, for instance, it has a new different video chipset on it that you can't get the specs for. So I assume you're going to have the same problem with the web pads and things. It'll just be a new video chipset every time. I don't know. They like to put the gee whiz latest thing into these things, and it's just bad. Okay, that's about all I want to say. I got a list of references here. These slides will be available. On my website, which is the top one, not at the moment, they're not, but they will be. The APM Daemon website, that's Avery's website.
It's been spelled wrong. There's only one T in Appenoir.
Okay.
Anyone's actually writing that down.
Don't write it down.
No.
There's a correct link off my website that works. I've tried it. The ACPI website, this may not be the latest. This may not be actually correct anymore, but it will get you to the right place. If you want the documentation, Intel actually don't publish the documentation on their website anymore, which was really exciting for me because that's where I used to link it from. I had about 36 people tell me that the link broke, so I went searching and it's just not there as far as I can see. So you've got to get it off the Microsoft site if you want it. The AMP there is not a typo. I don't know. That's what they did. Oop, sorry. Back. Okay.
Won't be long.
Right? No? Yes.
What about other embedded chips, especially they have registers and things that let you slow the processor down? And, you know, is there the ability to add support for that in Linux?
Of course we have the ability. We've got this generic power management interface now, right? The hard bit is basically getting the devices to do things at the right time, and we've got that as a generic interface, right? So devices can register and say, I want to know when things are happening to the power levels. But to do the actual like CPU throttling or changing the speed of the chip and things, that's all up to the particular architecture hardware. I just don't know about any of the other architectures, and I don't know if any of them do any throttling at all. It's mainly come from the laptops, web pad sort of arena, and almost all the laptops are Intel, okay?
Is there some mechanism to handle the change in clock rates or the jitters?
No. This is an interesting thing at the moment. There are some laptops, if you boot them and their batteries are low, they actually boot in a low speed mode. Like one of the ThinkPads will boot at 100 megahertz instead of 400 megahertz, okay? And if you do that, It does the BOGO MIPS calculation at 100 megahertz, okay, and gets this number, and then you plug the power in, it speeds up, and so all the U delay loops are a quarter of what they need to be. All the delay loops are a quarter of what they need to be, and this causes really interesting behaviour. There is no support inside Linux for changing the clock rate and coping. Okay, it's okay if you do the BOGO MIPS calculation at full speed and you only slow down. That's probably okay because all the delay loops get longer. But if you do the BOGO MIPS calculation,
time of day, when you slow down, will your clock suddenly?
That all works. That's okay. That's one of the things we do do is we set the clock back. Well, I don't know. It's supposed to work.
I've got this old 486 laptop that you can change its clock speed between 66 and 33 with a keystroke.
Oh, good. Start at 66. Yeah. It's been discussed. The only thing you could really do is to recalculate the delay loop.
Immediately.
Yeah, and you don't know that the clock rate's changed.
Well, on these embedded systems, you would, because...
Okay, if you know that would be useful, except, well, on Intel systems anyway, to recalculate the delay loop, you've got to turn all the interrupts off and you've basically got to run for a second or so with all the interrupts disabled and figure out how many instructions you can execute in a second, right? Which is a pain, and you don't want to do that sort of at arbitrary times. Dave?
What's the granularity of the U-delay that you're talking about?
U-delay, microseconds.
So could you not use the PIC?
The kernel's been changed during 2.3 to use the... we don't use the PIC, we use the clock counter. The problem with that is, of course, is that Intel's TSC changes speed with the rate of the... I think the transmitter guaranteed that it wouldn't change. Is that right?
Well, you faked it so it wouldn't change.
You faked it so it wouldn't change. Intel's change. One of them, Cyrix, I think, has a bug so that it's possible to read the TSC, which is the cycle counter. You read it twice, and it's possible for the difference to be zero, which is not a good thing. You wouldn't imagine that's possible, given that you really can't execute the two reads in one cycle in less than a cycle, but they did it. Basically, if you went to sleep between the reads and came back... They didn't update the cycle counter. This is good.
One question. How would you actually go about debugging a bug involving PCMCAA, suspend, and BIOS? I mean, I got this BIOS, which doesn't work after suspend. I guess everybody...
You've got a BIOS that doesn't work.
What?
Oh, there are BIOS that do. Most of the BIOS work.
Many that don't. Audio models, they don't come back correctly with the interrupt control after suspend. Something... screws up the interrupt controller. How would you actually start to debug this?
You've got to guess. You've got to get the specifications of the devices and see what they're doing. Try things and see. Like, for instance, there was one machine where, when you suspended and resumed, the clock was set back to the tick clock was set back to 18 hertz. Like Windows has, right? And so we now have a patch in that reinitializes the clock back to 100 hertz again. So there are you just got to find these things out and try and guess what's going wrong.
When did that patch go in?
That one, a long time ago.
It's enabled by default. My laptop started to stop working a long time ago. Exactly the opposite of time.
Well, it's the same code that it really initializes the thing in the first place, so I'm not sure that would be a problem, but it would be the problem. There's lots of other possibilities here. Dave?
So I just wanted to answer the question about debugging parameter nodes.
Yeah.
First of all, the short answer is really hard.
Yeah.
And the longer answer is, one of the things you want to do is take whatever components in the system you have and call the component manufacturer and say, hey, can I have this PCI card format and then debug it on the desktop? Once you can debug it on the desktop, you can plug in a PCI bus sniffer, and the bus sniffer can tell you all kinds of interesting things about whether the south grid is asserting that the CPU goes to the bus sniffer. So you can find out whether you're in PCI space saving or
Basically, you need a lot of hardware around you to figure it out. The software is really out of control here, right? There's nothing we can do, especially with APM, because we don't even have access to system management mode. If we had access to system management mode, we could, in theory, build a debugger inside that could watch what was going on, at least partly. We wouldn't be able to do what a PCI sniffer can do, but at least it'd give you somewhere to go. But you'll find any machine running APM, there's no way you can get into system management mode. Because as soon as you jump into system management mode, you're in the APM BIOS. And it's doing things. These are just the last of the references. This Intel's SL architecture book is, I wouldn't recommend anybody read it. It's just that's where I first found out about the system management modes and stuff. And documentation pm.txt, all the device driver readers should read this. First thing it says is, if you're writing a device driver, it must do power management. Full stop. Otherwise, we just can't do things. At the moment, it's a bit strange because if you're a PCI device and you don't have a suspend hook, we will still turn the power off on the PCI bus on you, which means when we come back, you may or may not recover. So everybody should do it. Yep.
Would it be possible to have sort of power management operate at a higher level, like always call device close and device open on, say, a network interface, rather than having every single network interface have a special suspend and resume?
Some of the network drivers already do that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Why should I have to change every single network driver, right? Why not add it at a higher level? Just call every network driver and say close and open on suspend.
Because close and open may not be sufficient. Right. There are some devices that cope with suspend and resume okay and don't need reinitialization. There are some devices that basically have to be reinitialized as though they were just powered up, or they just don't come back.
I use the network as a particular example.
Yeah, but the same is true across
the drivers. Is supposed to reinitialize the card whenever you do an IF config down up.
Yeah, so not all of them do. Yeah, exactly.
More than anything, right? So you should be able to catch most problems just by downing up in the interface.
You should most, yes. Most is the problem, right?
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, it's the same with PCI devices because there's actually a generic way to control the power management level of a PCI device. The PCI spec defines a generic way, okay? But the code in the kernel, if you look, says if they don't define a suspend, resume, and resume hook, we're not going to do the generic way because some PCI devices just don't cope, okay? Even if they say there's a capability bit in the PCI device space that says we do power management, and the things we will do, even if they do say that, some of them don't cope. And so basically we've got to work around all this buggy hardware. And so, yeah, the best place to do it is actually in each device driver because, in theory, the device driver writer knows about the bugs in the hardware, hopefully, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So there's just too many unknowns. Yeah. Then you're stuck. Right. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Sorry.
User mode ACPI. What's missing?
User mode ACPI.
Well, we have ACPI.
Sorry. The ACPI D. Well.
ACPI CTL.
Yeah. Do they? The last version I got, which was from May, the ACPID merely initialized some things so the kernel could do the sleep modes and would listen for interactions from other user mode things saying what is the battery status. And as far as I know, that's all it did.
It got upgraded in early July when they put the interpreter
in the kernel. Okay, well, that's what I need to look at because, like I said, I haven't had time over the last couple of months to actually follow up with what's going on with them. So I don't know what's missing. Yeah. The ACPI control program that came out in May wouldn't even compile, so I didn't get very far with it. In theory, the infrastructure is now all there, okay, so they can just sort of power forward and get things done. And I would be more than happy for them to get it all done because then I can, when people come to me and say my APM doesn't work, well, I'll say go and try ACPI. But at the moment, I can't say go and try APCI because their machines won't even suspend, right?
You have to fix all the BIOSes, which are in ACPI.
Well, there are workarounds in the ACPI code for BIOSes that they know are broken, so we can try. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
In the 2.0 kernels, I found a program. It's called, I forget what they called it now. A power management version of the BD Flash program. That would basically spin down your hard drive and then refuse to flush any of the kernel buffers until the hard drive spun back up again for a read.
Okay.
I haven't been able to find anything like that for 2.2. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No. One thing I've done recently, though, is to talk to the IDE maintainer and say, why don't you hook the APM stuff? And he wrote back to me recently and said, did you fix all your problems with that, with the IDE? And I haven't written back yet, but my reply will be, well, the problems aren't my problems with the IDE, the problems are the IDE problems with power management, because, for instance, the IDE stuff doesn't know when you suspend and resume at all, because it doesn't hook the stuff. And in particular, if you compile APM to the kernel, for instance, the only difference to the IDE driver is it will wait 30 seconds for a command to complete because the disk might have to spin up, whereas normally it waits like 5 milliseconds or something. But it has no knowledge of the power management. Right? If it had knowledge of the power management, then it could do things like blocking the device queues until you really wanted to do something. Right? And the disks could then spin down, and they wouldn't just spin up because somebody's just written a log message, like the APM daemon's done a log message, and so you spin the disk back.
Exactly.
Or the APM device driver's done a log message because it's in debug mode and things like that. So, you know, things. It would be nice for the disk subsystems to know about what's going on. Yeah. Because you could just block device queues, and that's a useful
when
thing.
When they pulled DD flush into the kernel for 2.2 and sort of lost the ability to do that. Well,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, you can patch the kernel. We've got the source. we do. Okay. Anything else?
Done.
Good. Done again.